Ladies and gentlemen, I'm privileged to welcome to the Solera Report Zach Voorhees, who was a successful entrepreneur and was a software developer at Google until he discovered in 2017, I believe, the Google algorithms for censorship, became a whistleblower, and now is one of the leading advocates for free speech and has just been a critical part of raising money and bringing a new lawsuit for the purge of independent media. So, Zach Voorhees, welcome to the Solera Report, and thank you for everything you're doing.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Okay, so why don't you just give a brief description for those who don't know about your evolution from a successful software developer to somebody very, very concerned about censorship?
Yeah, I guess the story starts at Google right after Trump won the election. I've been a Google employee for 8.5 years, 5 years at the time that Trump won the election. And what I saw was a company that was dedicated to free speech invert and decide that they were going to start filtering everything that they considered was fake news. And this happened in a public discussion that was held by the company 1 week after Donald Trump was elected. There was some very disconcerting things that were being said by the CEO, the CFO, and the other C-level executives, including that they wanted to make this election of Donald Trump a blip in history. They want to reverse this populism, that they were personally offended at the election of Donald Trump. And what was kind of skipped, but I didn't, but was actually the most important, was a question related to what Google had done, which was the most effective thing during the election, to which the response from CEO Sundar Pichai stating that the most successful thing was the use of machine learning to filter fake news. And for me, I was like, wow, well, what exactly is fake news? I'm going to go figure it out. Now, Google is a company that was very, very open, unlike, let's say, the CIA or Apple, which is incredibly siloed. And so as a result, I could just go and see what the people over the fake news were thinking, because they, you know, they were all very public with what we're doing inside the company. And so I went in and I looked at their fake news definition. What I found was that all the examples of quote unquote fake news seemed to center around Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton running weapons through Benghazi to arm ISIS. FBI officers that were hauling our case dying. And the exact headlines that they were using turned out to be fake news, but they were so close to actual headlines that were legitimate that I started to wonder whether what they were trying to do is that they were trying to create AIs that were going to falsely and incorrectly censor news stories that were real, because it looked like ones that were deliberately constructed to look like they were real, but were being classified as fake. And so I realized that, well, if there's something that is classifying something as fake news, then there's got to be something that's filtering it out. And so I dug in and I found what that project was, and it wasn't Project Dragonfly, as was popular in the media. As far as I know, that's a fake project. They had no trace inside the company. This one I found was massive, and a massive undertaking with a lot of internal propaganda. And that project was called Machine Learning Fairness.
And could you figure out from the documentation when that project began?
It began in Stanford, and then it was ingested into the company.
Okay.
And the company, it was prior to 2016. I believe the project was started in 2012 in Stanford, okay. And then it was sort of graduated into Google to be systematized. And this machine learning fairness is basically critical race theory, right? Like there's an oppressor and an oppressee. And so we need to like make everything fair so that we can like undo all the oppression. That's essentially what it is. And what they've done is that they've taken, they take AI, which is in this case, it's some type of AI called machine learning, which is a collection of neural nets. that are similar to brain cells in your brain, but they work under a similar fashion. And you just train them with massive amounts of data, and then they come to their own conclusions about how to classify things. And they can usually only classify like one thing, like, you know, fake news on a news article, that's a classifier, or in video or in text or in audio, you know. And so they create these classifiers off of a pile of data, and then you can give it novel data and it's able to classify that as well. And so this is what they meant by machine learning fairness. Classifiers are specifically designed to be social justice intermediaries and rebias the entire internet. And they're quite open about them wanting to bias the entire internet.
Right.
I remember looking through these slides, and these slides were saying about how describing people as programmable units, and it was a four-step process. And, you know, the first step was media was generated, and then it was like filtered, and then it was like aggregated and ranked. And then the last step was people like us were programmed, and then this would, you know, then these programmed people would then restart the cycle, because they would generate new content as a reflection of that social justice that they were indoctrinated with.
Now, Zach, once this was migrated from Stanford, is there any evidence to suggest that it was, the design was developed by anyone other than the company? Were there outside influences having input into this design?
Yeah, there was some consultants, and I've leaked some of those documents, my 950-page disclosure that you can see at ZachVoorhees.com. But mostly, from what I saw, it was inside the company itself. Like, you know, even though Google was using outsiders like ADL and the SLPC, I didn't really see them having a strong influence on this thing. I think what happened is that they were outsiders that had this as like a college thesis, and then Google was bringing them in as internal experts to complete this project.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So you made a decision to go public. You went public and rocketed to great fame. That's when I first saw you. Very impressive interviews and very cool under fire. And there was a lot of fire. And then you emerged as a major spokesperson for the First Amendment. Because you're very busy, your time is precious, we're going to jump to your latest accomplishment, which is we've seen in the last month tremendous purges of the independent media on social media and on the payment mechanisms and various mechanisms on the internet. And you have now been part of helping to raise money and lead an effort. You found an attorney to bring a lawsuit on behalf of a group of independent media referred to as Doe et al. And you've just brought a temporary injunction. You've gone out on the internet for your first raise of $130,000, and you've already topped. I just checked in because we're going to donate, and you're already You're already over your quest. Now, I think you're going to need some more money. So I hope you come out with another raise. But tell us about the purge. Tell us about the decision to go for the lawsuit. Tell us about how you found the attorney, and tell us a little bit about where the lawsuit is.
Yeah, so let's just start at the beginning. I've been considering that my final phase in this endeavor and this disclosure project would be a justice phase. And I've been waiting for the right timing for a while. I knew that this was going to happen, this event that you see right now where everything's being blacked out. I mean, Jesus, like Twitter is censoring the New York Post and their article about the Hunter Biden laptop, right? So this is very surprising to everyone else. I see this as just a continuation of where Google had been planning, which was to rig the election for Joe Biden or whoever the DNC cutout was going to be. And so, you know, now that we're here, really, you know, I've been waiting to do this for a year. On October 15th, Google decided that they were going to do a mass purge of Trump supporters. And the excuse that they used was that they were all QAnon supporters, which is, it's not true. It's partially true, but it's not like fully true. Some of the people mentioned it because it's everyone's talking about it. Like this QAnon thing. It's changing the whole political landscape. And so the media and the leftist DNC advocated that, you know, YouTube go ahead and remove these accounts or accounts that were talking about this in a positive light. And so YouTube took that initiative, and October 15th, they just purged it all, and they're continuing to purge. It hasn't really stopped.
And I just want to stop you because one of the most important elements of the purge was they gave no notice. They gave no specifics as to why people were being purged. So the absence of both timely communication and any communication is pretty astonishing.
It's pretty astonishing, yeah.
Yeah.
And so this is where we're at right now. There's a whole bunch of Trump supporting, you know, patriots that are now without the largest platform in the world. There's an exodus to all the other ones. And YouTube, I'm sure, knew that this would happen, but they timed the purge so that there wouldn't be a ability for a proper reaction in a timely manner. So people are weak right now and they can't regroup. And this is all sort of has the appearance of being a deliberate play to silence one side of the debate so that the preferred presidential candidate can be supported.
Now, am I correct in saying that many of the people purged from YouTube were also simultaneously purged from their payment mechanisms?
Yeah, so it happened within a week. So it was like October 15th was the YouTube purge, and then by October 23rd, it was the Patreon purge, which pretty much all these YouTubers were relying on as their main source of income.
Right.
And so now these people are, you know, what the whole rug has been pulled out from underneath them. And so I came to Florida to attend the American Priorities Conference. So I really couldn't do anything until after that had happened. And then after that had happened and this purge occurred, I was just sitting around with my friends and we were like, we got to do something. What are we going to do? Well, let's do a crowdfunding. And so we really didn't have a plan for PR other than I know that I've been on a lot of networks. So my hope was that I could get a few of these networks to do this. And then if I wrote the copy really well and gave my personal story, then the community would show an outpouring of support. And then that would signal sort of a herd mentality. And then everyone would kind of, you know, get on board. So that was the gamble. That was the gamble. Within the first 4 hours, it didn't appear to be working. I wanted to call it quits. And then we just got that first huge hit. And then the money started rolling in. And then by the end of the first 24 hours, we had fundraised a full one third of the entire campaign in that first 24 hours. So it was like, okay, yeah, this is definitely working now. And then on that first day, the interviews just started rolling in. And then, yeah, the account just started to fill up. And so we tried a whole bunch of different ways of trying to, you know, we did an SMS campaign, we did an email campaign, we did press releases, and we did YouTube. Really, it was the YouTube that was successful. All the other ones were like maybe together 15 to 20% of the campaign, and then the YouTube appearances were it. So by day two, we had the winning strategy, and we were just grinding on that winning strategy over and over and over and over and over again until we actually stopped campaigning actively, 2 days ago before the fundraiser, you know, came to success, and we just sort of coasted to the finish line.
So quite successful, quick and successful. So how did you find the attorney?
I did a careful vetting process through my network of attorneys that I had met over the last year, calling them up, asking them a bunch of questions. I'm pretty argumentative and I can hold my own. So I had some epic fights, and essentially the one that could out argue me, with me being kind of a domain expert, was the one that I chose. That was Chris. Also, it has to be in a proper jurisdiction because of the terms of service. So that's another thing that we had to, you know, we had to consider. So Chris Armenta and Sol, which is the law firm that's representing this group, I'm not part of the lawsuit, by the way.
Right. Right.
I'm not one of the plaintiffs for strategic reasons. And so she was just the best. So we went along with her, and you know, we filed on Monday, and we've already been rendered a decision or an action, which is that on November 2nd, we're going to, is our first hearing.
Okay, so you've gone in with a temporary injunction, and what does the temporary injunction ask for?
It asks for full reinstatement of everyone that was purged.
Full reinstatement. 15th. Okay. Okay. So you have a really experienced California litigator. What does your law firm think are the chances?
She thinks that's high. There's a dissenting opinion in the Enigma case where Thomas carved out exceptions for 230 and kind of a limiting scope. And so this case, I mean, the attorney, Chris Armenta, already had in mind a case like this to challenge the Section 230 and give it a proper scope. And so she's going to go ahead and use this case as that case to do it. And so we think that our chances are really high. And I mean, everyone's pissed right now. Like, there are so many people that are upset. The DOJ coming and throwing the hammer down on the antitrust issues adds just more fire to this. And so it's a really hot topic. And this thing has been in the right strategic timing to really put a limit on the Section 230. And also, because the government's been trying to get people off YouTube for political reasons, I mean, this is a perfect First Amendment case. YouTube is really acting as a quasi-state actor.
Right. So how can we support you? How can we support the litigation? Because you may have to go many, many more rounds before this is over. 130,000 can't get you the whole way. What can we do to support? One is to advertise the we're going to put this up. And we have a crowdfund called the Take Action Crowdfund, where we put direct links to other crowdfunds which are raising money for litigation. And my message to our subscribers is, what's the point of having more assets if you don't have an army to protect them? So we're trying to encourage support of this kind of litigation. So we will put a tab up for you and link to your crowdfund and link to your website. But what else can we do to help?
If anyone out there wants to support someone with zero overhead, I mean, it's literally me. I don't have like a building that I
work in or anything. So can we donate at your website?
Yeah, you can donate to my website. You can go to www.zachvoorhees.com and see my disclosures of Google. You can also reach out to me on Twitter, where I do my political wargaming. That's twitter.com/perpetualmaniac. It was my gamer tag. If someone wants to donate to this legal fund, that's punchgoogle.com. And we're keeping that open, even though we fundraise. People are continuing to donate the money. We're using that for the case because we don't think that this is just going to be phase one. We think it's going to be phase one, two, and three. And so any additional money that we get is going to be put towards that phase two of this. And if anyone wants to have that tax deductible donation, I'm backed by a sponsor. His name is Robert Epstein. He was the he's a very famous psychologist that's been in the news lately. Mm-hmm. He's my mentor. So the best way to do that is reach out to me through that Twitter direct message. I don't like you giving out my personal email just because.
Don't give out your personal. Yeah. Don't worry. We've got your donate page. Now, one last question. Who are the politicians and free speech leadership who's been helpful on this issue?
It's really been Ted Cruz and Matt Gaetz and Louie Gohmert. And Marsha Blackburn. I mean, these are the vanguard out here fighting, and they really get it. And we need to give them as much support as they can, and God bless them for what they're doing. I mean, Ted Cruz today, it's October 28th, he just grilled all of the the big tech executives, and it was just a really great thing to see, just working on behalf of the people like that.
So you would recommend taking, I'll take a look at it. I'll make sure we post it. Okay, well, we are in cahoots, Zach. Your job is to tell us what we can do to support you, okay? And
thank
we will
so
get
much.
All this information out to our subscribers. We'll publish this next week. And, you know, it reminds me of Roger Penske, who used to say, speed costs money, how fast you want to go. So we just need to put some more gas in your tanks. Have a wonderful day. And again, thank you for joining me on the Solaria Report.
Thank you very much, Catherine.
Bye.
Right. Bye.